Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Radio EduTalk. My name's David Noble, and you're listening to one of the Thursday night shows on the Professional Learning for Teachers channel. I'm delighted this evening to welcome to the show Gemma Calderwood, who is a maths teacher up in the Highlands, and Gemma's going to be talking about her work that she did towards her professional recognition project. That's professional recognition that's awarded by the General Teaching Council for Scotland, and our work was around promoting and encouraging active and cooperative learning. Gemma, welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening.
And if you have got any questions or comments for Gemma based on what you hear over the next half hour or so, then you can get in touch in two ways. You can email edutalker@talkmail.co.uk, that's EDUTALKR, or if you're on Twitter, you can pop something up using the hashtag EduTalk. Gemma's kindly shared a few kind of reflective questions and resources which may be of interest to our dear listeners, either after listening to what Gemma has to say this evening or indeed at the same time. So if you would like to get an insight into her work and her thinking and you know, some other resources, then all you need to do at the moment is go to edutalk.cc and then click on Professional Learning for Teachers channel, and you'll see in the listings details of the show that you're listening to at the moment, and there's a hyperlink. It says click here for the show's recommended reading, etc. And if you just click on the hyperlink, as I say, you'll be able to access all those useful links, which I think we've got a record 7 reflective questions, Gemma, for tonight's show. So that's excellent.
Well, you didn't need to use them all. I was just
chatting.
Again, waffle.
No, it's another. They're great questions to get us thinking. And also on that link is a summary of your recent presentations and blog posts around this Lead On project. So, Gemma, could you just give us a wee bit of a background to your career in education, and then just start to take us through, I suppose, what professional recognition has been to you, and how the project on cooperative and active learning got off the ground?
Okay, well, I've a relatively short time in education so far. I ticked the box after my probation year 8.5 years ago, not as a money-grabbing student person as as people sometimes think, but as a very indecisive person who didn't have a clue which authority would be the best for me. And luckily, fate has put me in possibly the best authority. I've just found such a great welcome and such great opportunities here up in Highland Council. And I ended up in a very small school for my probation year in a department of a PT and myself. And then after a couple of years, the PT moved on, and it was I was running the department single-handedly, and from that became principal teacher of maths and numeracy. Within a year and a half, 2 years of my probation year, which was pretty spectacular and a very steep learning curve, as you can imagine. From there, I was always kind of not feeling very worthy of the position. So I've been ever since been looking for opportunities for extending my learning and CPD that would help me feel kind of, yeah, I deserve that job. So that's how I kind of fell into the Highland Council's leadership project called the Lead On course, and it's basically a 18-month course where you kind of meet every couple of months, and we kind of talk about leadership and go through various different activities, and we've got lots of reading to do, lots of kind of professional development. And within that course, they encourage you to carry out a project, and from the project, you if you apply, you can get your professional recognition from the GTC. Now, the professional recognition is a It's just actually an application form that you fill in, but you have to have it backed up by the courses that your CPD that you've done, and by the, as I say, the kind of projects you've done. You have to kind of demonstrate what you've done, how you've shown expertise in the area that you've done. So I actually, my professional recognition is in leadership because of the leadership course that I carried out. But through trying to promote active and cooperative learning through the schools that I've worked at, I've since left the school I started that I did my probation year in, about this time last year, actually. I left there, and I'm now at a big school, quite close to my original school, still in Highland Council. Mm-hmm. And I found that the professional recognition leadership skills that we were talking about, and the trying to promote active and cooperative learning, so I went down the leadership route for professional recognition, although I probably could have done leadership, and I could have probably done I can't remember the top of my head what its name is, but it was like teacher training. You can get recognised for teacher training and for delivering CPD, right. And you can also get professional recognition for learning and teaching. So again, it could have ticked that box. So there's a few different ways I could have done, but because I started out originally trying to get some leadership opportunities, or not opportunities, but to the CPD in leadership to try and help me in my quest to be a good PT. That's why I chose that. So the byproduct of that was the promoting active and cooperative learning project that I did, and kind of looking at raising the profile of different strategies, trying to get teachers talking about different strategies, etc. I'm telling you, I've just waffled.
That's a brilliant introduction, Gemma. Thanks. And so, just before we go into the kind of main topic, then, but how does the lead on, or how did the lead on program work for you then, in particular? Was it face to face? Was there an online element? And I've certainly heard of a couple of people recommending. And can you say why it worked for you? Why it is such a good approach to fostering leadership?
Well, I had just done my I don't know if you've seen it. It's a course as well called Cooperative Learning, the 3-Day Academy, and it's a it's Chris Ward, who's a cooperative learning guru from Canada, who I think she works with North Lanarkshire Council. So I think she's kind of signed up with a few councils. And she started doing these 3-day academies where you go and you learn about cooperative learning. And they were absolutely, just blew me out of the water. I came away from that a completely different teacher, completely different outlook on things. I was so invigorated, even after just 4 or 5 years as a teacher. I was kind of, I don't know, I became a wee bit bogged down with, I had an epiphany at that 3-day academy. I just loved it. It spoke to me. It spoke to my, I found my teaching style. I found things that I can work. So I was very interested from that point of view that when the council, I was going through their website, they have like an online website where you go and see the courses that they offer. And there was another one, a cooperative thing, and it would mention Chris Ward, and I was, I'd love to hear more about what she's doing, and what she's saying, kind of thing. And it was it just happened to be a leadership thing as well, so it kind of ticked all those boxes for me. So I went along. I hadn't actually read too much into it. I just read that it was kind of on these Saturdays. I'm thinking, oh damn, that's my football day. It's a bit rubbish. But I kind of really, once we started going along to it, I was like, oh, this is, I would happily go to this. And I think that speaks volumes for itself, that I'd rather do CPD than watch Kilmarnock getting hammered at the weekend. But it was really good. Chris Ward delivered it for over the 18 months. She was there at every session, and we did loads of different things. We were all grouped off, so I was in a group cooperative styley, I actually only had two other people because the numbers didn't work. So everybody else had a four, but we had a three. Mm-hmm. And we went every Saturday for every couple of months, and we had team building activities, and it was us that had to supply it. So in the February, I had to do the team building activity, and somebody else had to do the quote, and somebody else had to do the website, and then it rotated round. So you got a turn at doing all of the different activities. Everything was done through the cooperative learning style, which was really good. It showed good leadership skills that you could use for not just for the classroom, but for department meetings and for staff meetings, all of these things. It just kind of opened my eyes to the way different things could happen. And there was just all sorts of different activities going on. She's a very good presenter if you ever get to the chance to see her.
And so what are the kind of key parts of her approach then, or her message? I mean, I would imagine that active and cooperative learning, we could imagine what that means or what it might mean, and we'll have all been through insert a CPD ourselves, but does she have a particular take on it all, or and I suppose to follow that through into, can you say that, then say a bit about this epiphany and how it has changed your practice long term?
Well, I think she's kind of shown me that she's leading by example. She obviously believes that cooperative learning, it does make a difference. I believe that too. I've seen it in practice from leading staff CPD as well as doing cooperative learning styles activities in my classroom. But she very much, everything, you never turn up to a presentation. Every time I've been to a Chris Ward presentation, it's always been done in the cooperative style, and it's not been her at a PowerPoint talking through, and you be feeling kind of, I'm quite a distracted person, I would say. I kind of can drift off here and there, and as you can maybe tell from when I'm talking, I'll just go off on wee tangents, and that can sometimes happen. I don't know how many CPD sessions or staff meetings or things like that I've sat down, and you can see other people as well, they just kind of, they're not really there. Whereas if you're in a group and you're kind of you have to be, on your toes at all times, and you have to be with it. You have to be on the ball, because the way that the activities have all been designed, that you can't just kind of zone out for 5 minutes, which has helped me enormously in the classroom as well, as I say, with staff CPD. And from my own personal CPD, if somebody is presenting in that format, then I think I take more away from it. I think everybody in the room takes more away from it. It goes back to the triangle of you learn, 10% of what you read, but you learn 90% of what you actually do or teach to somebody else. Whose triangle is that? I keep wanting to say Bloom's. It's not Bloom's. Glassman? Glassman's triangle?
I'm sure somebody on Twitter will help us out with that one.
Yeah.
I certainly know the stats you're referring to.
Yeah. Well, I just think in maths as well, it's very easy. Like, I could just stand at the board and say, okay, here's a Pythagoras question. This is how you do it. You go and do 30 more that it can work. But I just feel that if they're explaining it to somebody else, if they're doing an activity where they have to, kinesthetically, prove Pythagoras, or they have to do something that physically it will, go into their heads better. Is maybe what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, my practice has changed. I stand at the board and, say that, a lecturey type teacher. I was always looking for active and, group work type things. It's just that the cooperative learning you have to really think about the dynamics, the psychology of, the child psychology and our adult psychology as well, if you're doing it for a staff CPD. And from that point of view, it's really helped hone my skills and make everything I've done a little bit better. And that's what I wanted from the course. So I'm just really thankful for that.
I think just incidentally, I'll jump in there. I think it was a quote from William Glasser, possibly.
Glasser's pyramid.
So I'm wondering how this, based on some of your kind of blog posts, you use a kind of team analogy or metaphor quite frequently, and does that link in then with cooperative learning, the fact that everybody needs to be on the ball all the time or ready to receive the ball, so to speak? So if it's in a learning situation, everybody has a role continually, even if they're not the person that's sort of defending or attacking the ball at that particular moment.
Yeah, I think, my dad took myself and my brother to the football since we were, I think he maybe just grabbed us out of my mum's arms and took us to our first game as soon as we were born, pretty much. So I've been brought up on football, and I also was a swimmer when I was, well, I still swim, but I was a swimmer when I was in my youth. And so I've always really been part of a team. But then at school, it was very much, I was very shy. I wasn't a very talkative person at all until I get to know somebody. So being shy, being at school, not really, you know, I was always the person that you would report saying, she does, you know, she's very, you know, good people, very quiet, doesn't say much. But alas, so I'm very conscious of those types of students. And I'm very conscious of when I'm in a group, I know that I need the voice on the table exercise, which is that you never put people in a group together and then just give them a task and tell them to get on with it. And expect them to actually carry out that task effectively so that everybody, you know, gets out of it what they should be and so that everybody contributes. And I'm conscious of that because I would be one of those students that would be like, okay, well, I'll just let the loudest person talk. They'll go on with it. And I would foresee that somebody else would be brainier than me, so I'd be thinking, well, they're right all the time, so we'll just let them, you know, him or her get on with it, and we'll just sit back and hope for the best. Whereas with cooperative learning, if you structure it right, then everybody is accountable and everybody actually has to make sure, you know, they're involved. And if the goalie doesn't turn up, then it doesn't matter if you've got a good defence or a good midfielder or a good striker. If, you know, you can't work without the other. And it also, Chris Ward's a firm believer of, you know, every child matters, and there is children that don't have any friends. They're not liked by their peers. He actually gives a percentage, which I'm really sorry, I can't remember off my head, but it is pretty substantial. And you just don't have any friends. And if you think about that in the class, in the school situation, that's really sad. And I do think, well, if we can structure it in such a way that even these people feel needed for, you know, even just 55 minutes of a day, then that, you know, it makes me feel a little bit better at the end of the day if I can think that, all right, that wee girl, she actually had, you know, contact with people for 55 minutes, or she was, her group really encouraged her today, that sort of idea. So, yeah, I think I'm a very much a team player. I think that the team situation can work. I also believe, like, from the point of view of leadership and senior management and all that sort of, you need kind of all the different personalities, and you need the different people so that you can have the range and so that you can contact more people, so that you can have more people on board. And I know that I have deficiencies in some areas, so that I it's good for me to know other people who are good in that area, so that we can, that, you know, because that can help me, it can help others, etc. So I'm very aware of the team spirit from my youth, but also through the teaching practices of the cooperative learning and just things I've picked up over the years, I guess. It makes me feel a wee bit better knowing that people are happier.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like there's a direct link then between you know, this learning through the programme with Chris Ward and and you setting up the teacher learning communities and the CPD opportunities, it sounds as if it all fits nicely together. The whole ethos behind even setting up a TLC is there, based on the kind of principles of cooperative learning, but you've then gone on to make that the focus of the TLC in terms of then effecting a change in the class.
Yeah, I do believe that teacher CPD should always be about the learner. And the learner, and I mean the frontline learner. There's no point in me going to CPD that's not going to help me be a better teacher for my learners that are in front of me. So the TLC groups, these are teacher-learner communities. This is, again, it's a Highland thing, and what they were finding was, it goes back actually to Assessment is for Learning, and you know, lots of people were getting CPD on, you know, different strategies, and then they were going back to schools and they were trying them all out, and then that's kind of it. It was as if going the CPD course, come back to school, you've ticked the box, you've made your hours for the year CPD wise, and you kind of do it all again next year. So Highland Council, and probably other councils, I have to confess that I'm not up on that. I don't know what other councils do, but they brought in this tapestry TLC kind of system where some teachers would be kind of trained to lead discussion and to lead wee sessions, and within that have groups of teachers meet in, you know, once every so often. I'm trying to aim for one every 3 months, or you know, once a term. And the teachers come together and say, right, you know, did you try that strategy? Did it work for you? They say, yeah. They say, no. You talk about it, discuss it. Did it work for this pupil? Did it work for that pupil? That sort of idea. And also, no, I didn't get to try that. Or somebody saying, oh, I did try that and it was really good. I think you should have a go at it. Or, you know, it really, or even in the negative, no, it just didn't work for this class. I'd maybe try it for another class, but it just, you know, it didn't work for these people. So the teacher learning communities for AIFL were pretty successful, and they ran for about a year and a half. And now Highland Council, they've been putting quite a lot of money into the three-day cooperative learning academies. And a lot of teachers in Highland have been to these academies. So again, it's about keeping it live, keeping it in schools, teachers talking about it, trying to spread the word, trying to get more people either involved in some way. And actually, a lot of my TLC group, the ones that come along to the sessions, haven't actually done the 3-day academy. So I do feel obliged, and I do feel that it is my job to kind of try and spread what I've learned to them and tell them what's available and show them some activities or some lessons that, you know, that have benefited my teaching that could possibly benefit theirs, but also to be there to listen to what they've done, even if they've not done the cooperative learning. They'll have strategies that I can take away from that. So that's where the TLC came from, and I think it's a really good idea, because a lot of our time does get taken up by things that are a little bit too admin-y, and we get caught up in not getting the chance to talk to other teachers.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how you go about keeping the TLC kind of refreshed and vibrant, and also at the forefront of the school leaders' minds, and maybe in terms of the school improvement plan, because there must be. I'm certainly not saying this is an initiative or a one-off project, because you can see how vital it is to good teaching and learning, but there must be pressures from elsewhere to, you know, to have another emphasis or to have another teacher learning community. There's already great demands on your colleagues' time, no doubt. So yeah. How do you go about promoting the work and even promoting the actual existence of meetings?
Well, when I send out emails, the subject line is always chocolate biscuits. or something of this effect. Try and get my colleagues' attention. And I also provide biscuits, because CPD goes far better if there's a wee sweetie or a wee biscuit. supplied, I believe anyway. The tea cakes went particularly well down, particularly well the last time, the last TLC. But yeah, as you say, everybody's busy, especially this year with the Nationals. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm, and I mean, the first day back after the Christmas holidays, normally, I mean, as I say, I've only been in education 8 years now, but normally everybody comes back and, you know, vibrant and fresh. The first day back, it was as if nobody had been away. You know, it was really, it was a remarkable day, that first day back, that it was very visible. I'm not Sherlock Holmes in my noticing things, you know. I kind of pick them up sometimes, but most of the time I'm in my dream world. But it was very noticeable that day, and I just thought, this is crazy. You know, everybody is just full on with Nationals and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, how do you get the Nationals? It's through teaching, and it's through learning. Mm-hmm. And teaching and learning should be so much further up the agenda than what, you know, what it can be sometimes. So from that point of view, I don't have half the staff. I think I've got just under a quarter of the staff that attend the TLCs. So obviously it's not huge numbers. So that does show that other people have got too much going on. But from that point of view, there's a few people who've came to me and says, I'm really interested, but I've got, you know, I've got after school study support. I can't come along to the sessions, or, you know, they've got even just home life. There was a woman who couldn't make it because of childcare issues.
Yeah.
And so from that point of view, I made sure they had all the materials that everybody else, the presentation, PowerPoint slides, etc., that kind of go along. It's not great because, as I said, the like what Chris Ward does, it's all kind of hands-on stuff. You learn by doing.
Yeah, yeah.
So kind of reading about it, it does work for some people. I'm sure that works for English teachers, just reading stuff and they get it. But it definitely doesn't work for me or, you know, for others. So being hands-on, that's kind of put them at a disadvantage. But I'm making sure that I kind of contact them, let them know it's still on. I can, I mean, make them more than welcome, just to encourage them. And even if they do join in a little bit late, that, you know, they don't join into the second or the third session, then at least they're joining in, is my opinion. And I would never turn anybody away just because they missed the first one or the second one or something like that. But it is just very much, I've picked a week where there's nothing else on for the session to be held. So the next one is a week in March, which calendar wise in the school there's nothing else timetabled. There's no parents' nights, there's no reports, or the reports are due like the week before. So I've kind of looked at the whole school point of view of that, so that you're not hitting a week which is really horrendous with too many after school things, and the hope that you'll maybe get more people coming along. I can't really think about anything else, but yeah. Biscuits really do work if you're going to do CPP.
And I'll just remind folk, if maybe they're just tuning in, that are listening to Jamie Calderwood, who's a maths teacher in the Highlands, and just talking about a professional recognition project around active and cooperative learning. We're just coming into the last 10 minutes or so, Jamie. If it's possible for you to just to continue with us for a bit longer. I've got so many questions in my head that I want to ask, and I need to kind of admit defeat. We're not going to get through everything this evening, but
I'm sorry, I do
waffle. No, you haven't at all, Gemma. Again, trying to remain.
That's usually the other half home.
That's great. It's usually my children. now, trying to remain positive, because no doubt, you know, you're talking about how it has made such a great impact in your own teaching and learning that goes on in your class. But it must be difficult to manage, you know, these new approaches. I'm thinking, you know, we were talking just before we went live about all the kind of assessments at the moment around the Nationals and such like. And do the young people that you work with, do they appreciate that the time where there is a focus on active and cooperative approaches, and do they recognise that in the real world it's not always possible to have sessions that are designed in such a way?
Well, I have to say that when I first moved to my current school, I was given the top fourth year using, you can't see, but I'm making the speech marks here, and they were kind of, I went in and I was thinking, oh, this would be a really good class to be able to do lots of cooperative stuff with. And most, to be honest, the top end are actually the ones that struggle the most with the social stuff, because they're too busy. You know, they are kind of getting motored on, and they don't have the time to kind of to be able to work with each other. And if they are going to go on to high flying businesses and want to work in places like such that. As you know, Formula One driving and all that, they're going to have to be able to work in teams. So I thought, look, I'll go in there and I'll get a couple of cooperative learning lessons and we'll do this and we'll do that. And they hated it. Like, the first lesson, I was like, we're going to do this. And they're like, we have to get up off our seats. They were outraged at the fact that they had to get out their seats. But after the first lesson, that, you know, it went okay. They kind of admitted at the end that they had liked it. Through feedback that I had got from them, and then, you know, it's now become a routine thing. They don't actually, you know, now it's just became part of the teaching. So there's certain classes that I use cooperative learning with more than I do others, and there's certain times of year or certain different topics that I've still to develop materials or resources to use, or I've got different ways that I think work better that might not involve cooperative, because I don't think it's I don't think it's the only thing that should be in our toolbox. I think that, you know, there's teachers out there that have got brilliant ideas that I could learn so much more from as well. So it's all about making sure that the activities fit the learning, and it's not like the learnings to fit the activities. But I do believe that it could, you know, you could use it with any class, with any, even revision. Just now, it's been very good to be getting people, the fourth years have got their prelim next week, so they've been doing lots of revision activities, and revision can get quite boring. So if you're just sitting doing past papers or this or that, so getting them to do activities where they have to involve the team and they have to, or some sort of competitions. They really like relay races, my fourth year class, because they're very competitive. So doing that sort of thing, even at this time of year, I would only ever do cooperative learning or active learning if the situation lends itself. And quite often I'll find that my time is cut down. So, for instance, I have to teach indices to fourth years for the nationals. Now, there's 5 index laws, and that would normally, you could just do a lesson on each, so that would be 5 lessons. But I used a cooperative style where they had to learn the rule and divide the work, etc., which meant that they were able to do indices within 2 periods rather than 5. And then it meant, actually, I could do a couple of extension tasks with the other couple of periods while the next set down were kind of still working through other stuff. So, it just depends on the activities and what you do. You can actually cut down your time. Sometimes it does take longer because you've got to do the team building aspect of it, and that's worth doing. So sometimes you have to lose a lesson to be able to gain later on down the line, but it is hard, and it's very hard to keep a kind of positive enthusiasm about the learning, etc., the cooperative learning and the activities when there is so much going on. You know, if something needs, like tonight I was guillotining a few things for tomorrow, and you can see that if it came to it, then maybe that would slide because I should have been doing a couple more prelim papers and marking them. So I'm well aware, being at the chalk face myself, you are aware of the time constraints on everybody, and it's about choosing your battles. So I'm not going to force somebody to try and to do a cooperative learning lesson, even if I believe that it would help them. Mm-hmm. If I could see that it's just not the right time to even mention it, I'll wait to later down the line.
And Jim, I just turning back to the actual, I suppose, the paperwork or the sort of evidence requirement for your professional recognition. I think it was the right document I'm referring to. You were actually linking your work to not the new professional standards or to the curriculum experiences and outcomes, but actually to the quality indicators and how good is our school.
Yeah, I've been through two inspections in less than a year, so I think they're maybe a little bit fresh in my head. I left one school just after an inspection. No relation, of course. I wasn't moved because of that. And then I moved to another school and they got the box a few months after I started. So yeah, they were kind of in my head, and I guess that's what we should be kind of measuring ourselves against. I mean, there's so many things that you could use the quality indicators. You could use the professional GTC thing. It could be using any, but when I was setting up my project, I did believe that there was no point in doing something just for the sake of doing it. I actually had to have relevance to my school. And one of the things on the school improvement plan to do with the QIs was learners' experience. And, you know, being a passion of mine, making sure that the learners are getting the best experience possible, I just thought that, well, yeah, I'm doing my TLC groups. I'm going to try and start them up. Well, let's just link it all together and not create extra work for myself and not make it that I'm inventing something for the sake of inventing it, and then it's going to have no real relevance at the end.
And one of the other documents that I read, now correct me if I'm wrong, but it looked as if it was very much focused on, you know, this is the learning that I've experienced in, you know, my own CPD opportunities that I've sought out, and here's what's going to change, or here's the plan for how things are going to change within school or department or within my own class. It was a very detailed plan that I read a few years, Gemma, and am I right in saying that came towards the end of the professional recognition process, or was that actually your plan before the project started?
That was, I think if I'm thinking about the same document, then that's the one, the lead-on course that I was on. You had to produce a kind of plan of what you were going to do for your project.
Right. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And there's a Glow group where everything gets uploaded. So I talked earlier about how every time we met as a group, as the lead-on course, we had to do a team-building activity, or we had to have a quote that was analysed, and we, you know, talked about it, you know, different activities to do with the quote. There was websites, and every time we went, everybody was in charge of doing something. So there was four activities, and they rotated round, and all of that was uploaded to our Glow group. So that everybody, there was, I can't remember how many groups there were, but there was lots of groups, so maybe about 34. No, that's maybe too much. No, that probably was about that. But there was, everybody was sharing all their information, so there was lots of quotes to read. There was lots of discussions about the different quotes. So it was like leadership quotes about, the one that sticks in my head was, people hate change until the change itself is worse than the not changing is worse than the change itself, which was actually a Jamie Oliver quote. Randomly, but it was because you were sharing all that and it was going on Glow, your project was also going up on Glow, so as other people could look at your project, and so you'd be able to say to somebody, oh, because a few people actually did it on some aspect of cooperative learning, and some, you know, there's a lot of people doing it on numeracy in the primary school, or a lot of people doing it on literacy in the primary school. So you were able to go and, you know, find that those people and kind of have a word with them and talk to them about what they were doing. So it was actually really good to have submitted that plan of action. Mine's changed drastically. When I moved to the school, I thought initially I'll just, you know, it's a really big school. I'm used to working with maybe, what was it, about 13, 14 members of staff in my small school as a probationer and as PT, maths and numeracy. But then when I came over to here, I'm in a school of over about 90 staff, something like that. So it was, I was thinking, oh, I'll just stick to maths and I'll just try and promote my cooperative learning and active learning and maths. And then my PT suggested, well, how about, you know, getting science involved? There's a few young teachers down there, you know, maybe you could get something going with them. But when I went to the deputy head, she was like, no, we're rolling it out. We're going across the school, Gemma. You can't mm-hmm. you can't just keep this to yourself. So that's how it's ended up, you know, a little bit larger scale than what I thought. But I definitely do think that your project has to have somewhere you're going. You might never reach that destination because it's going to develop. It's maybe going to go off one way or it's going to go another way. So you can't say that for sure, but it definitely should, you know, be relevant, and it should, you know, take you on a journey, and that's what I've definitely been on.
Mm-hmm. And how does that journey continue then, Gemma? You know, do you get opportunities to go on another or the next lead on course, or is it obviously I'm sure Highland's the same as many other parts of Scotland that they need to be developing, nurturing, you know, leaders right across their education system, and maybe not everybody can get regular opportunities. So do you have to kind of engage in self-directed leadership opportunities, or, you know, will the authority be able to support you further?
Well, I've actually just this week I've applied for a couple more courses, one in which is to become a trainer to be able to do the 3-day academy and to be able to train people to lead TLCs. So that, you know, that's a kind of a development route that I'm keen to pursue there, as well as I need to continue getting my TLC group in school to, you know, to be sustainable, to keep that going and get through the year, getting everybody to as many sessions as possible and make sure I can raise the profile there. So the short term goal is just looking at my school and making sure that I can't just stop. I've started the TLC. I need to keep the ball rolling and keep the enthusiasm with my the participants who have very kindly volunteered to come along and give up their time. But they're also the lead-on course that I've been talking about tonight, amongst other things, does actually have a follow-up, which I believe starts the beginning of next session, if you know, so like maybe it's September time next year,
mm-hmm.
so that it does take the people who have done the lead-on course over the 18 months, and you go to that, and apparently there was a friend of mine from another school was saying, oh, you'll love it, Gemma, it's all your kind of, it's all your theory and all that sort of stuff that you really like. I didn't even know that I like theory and all that. She seemed to think I did. So it goes into more detail, more of the psychology side of things, and looking, because we've looked at how people deal with change, and we've looked at some strategies that we can use. But they definitely the follow on. I think it's called follow on my lead. They call it, which is a wee play on words, I guess.
Yeah.
And it definitely is something that I'm going to sign up for when it comes along to develop my skills, and because I've got somebody in the department has actually signed up for the lead on this year,
mm-hmm.
so they were talking today about their project and what should they do and asking advice for that. So it'll be interesting to see him going through the year, and then next year I'll be moving on to the next one.
Yeah.
But I'll also be pursuing cooperative learning. Training to try and help train others, because I think mm-hmm. I can offer within my school, my ASG, or even, you know, in the council, it doesn't really matter where it is, but I'm keen to help teachers talk about teaching and learning.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds fascinating. Best wishes with that. But my final question is just about your blog. If you could maybe say a wee bit about that, about your kind of a approach to blogging and what people can find there. Just before you came in on that, Gemma, I better say that we've had a couple of people tweeting during the show, and our dear friend Barbara van der Meulen's been busy away on Twitter. So I'll try and
Dutch lady.
And a couple of tweets that she's been putting out there. She says it's good to hear the extensive discussion about the genius that is Chris Ward, cooperative learning guru. Barbara also loved her sessions, and she said, Barbara adds that CPD should always be about the learner, the pupil. Let's remember this when we roll out professional update. And she loves the idea of tea cakes.
See, I told you, they're a winner.
Absolutely. So your blog, Gemma.
Yeah, I don't like writing. I don't really like talking either. I'm a math teacher. We do letters and numbers, but we do them in very short format. So the idea of blogging was just, I didn't want to do it. I do read blogs from my own practice, from lots of, I've got an InnoReader where I follow about, I don't know how many blogs, but lots of them. And your listeners are going to think she's not a math teacher, she's got no number skills whatsoever. I keep thinking, oh, just lots of them. Sorry, I digress. But I didn't want to blog, but I took part late last year in the Math Twitter blogosphere, I think it's called.
Oh, okay.
And basically it's an online community that use Twitter and blogs, and they were just trying to connect, you know, math teachers and, you know, make sure that people are reading blogs and tweeting and using it for practice and to make sure everybody's connected. And it was really great CPD. They ran 8 missions. They launched them every Sunday night for 8 weeks, and every Sunday they'd post up a wee mission for you to do. So the mission one was to create a Twitter account, tweet a couple. It gave you a few people that you could tweet, but also just said, just search about math and you'll come across, and you know, just start getting connected. And then the following week was create your own blog. And I, you know, at that point I thought, oh, maybe I just won't do this. But I just thought, oh, no, I'll do it and see how it goes. So from that, I've kept it alive, kept my blog, and even after the 8 weeks, and I've just been adding to it as and when. And sometimes I just do it for sort of like a wee diary, just to kind of get your thoughts out. And if you've had a good day or a bad day, if you kind of get it down on the blog, even if nobody reads it, I've kind of got it out of my system and kind of reflect on it that way. So I actually have found that I'm not going to say this too loudly, I don't want Barbara to get ideas that English is better than math, but it did actually help doing the writing after some lessons or after activities or after CPD or things like that. So if anybody's not tried it, I would recommend trying blogging to see if it can help them in any way. If it doesn't, it doesn't, but you won't die trying.
Mm-hmm. And John absolutely loves the web address for the blog, so do you want to just tell everyone?
My name is Gemma, spelt with a J, and I kind of, I've got a little bit of a waddle. So I've always been known from birth of as Gemma Puddle Duck, or just Puddle Duck. So I can't, without kind of ripping Beatrix Potter off too much, I've went with Gemma P Duck. Also, it didn't fit on, I think somebody else had it on Twitter, so that's why I went Gemma P Duck.
And so Gemma P Duck online and on Twitter, yeah.
Yes, that's. If you want to hear more waffling and more talking about Kilmarnock getting being rubbish.
And we've gone way over time, but within the blog you've got this My Virtual Filing Cabinet. Is that a kind of work in progress? Because there's some. I had a little look through somebody teaches National 3 maths. It's a. It's quite interesting, and is that something you're looking to kind of develop?
Again, that was part of the Math Twitter blogosphere, the MTBOS program. That was one of the kind of final ones, was to you know, they're all for sharing, which is kind of my motto. I know that a lot of people think, well, other people don't share, and so why should I, kind of attitude, and I completely understand that, but I'm all for sharing. You know, my ideas are not hugely great, but if I can put something up that somebody somewhere will benefit from, then I'm going to do it. So I started the virtual filing cabinet, and I've populated a few things that, you know, the things that I've kind of regarded are maybe the better of my resources. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's something that I would like to develop. There's loads of math stuff out there, and there's loads of different subjects out there, but math in particular, I've found there's a wealth of subjects, a wealth of people with blogs, with different activities. So sometimes it's not even my stuff, it's just a link to somebody else, because I do like the idea that if we all share, then, I mean, look at how the SQA, how many schools, how many people in Scotland have created a National 5 RESET assessment? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they might have had pupils that have failed the first assessment, and because the SQA has only provided one for the entire of Scotland, that's the only one we can use. So what do we use as a RESET? So there's so many, you know, people across Scotland have taken all that time to produce an assessment, and it's the same with resources. So I think if we, it might be, it's a way that we can cut down the time that we have to spend, you know, doing things like that if we're all sharing. So on the blog there is a wee bit that's got some algebra, some plenary activities. Got my little Twitter thing that I use for my classes where they tweet as a plenary activity. So just a few, and a couple of cooperative learning things. I've got a few cooperative learning tasks are on tests as well, but I've tried to put them all on the blog, so, because I know people might not have signed up for the test website, because you have to sign up and register and all that. So, I just think that, especially with cooperative learning, the planning that's involved couldn't be too all-consuming.
Yeah.
So I think if as a cooperative learning practitioner, if I can share what I've done, then if that cuts down the time and it's going to make somebody more willing to try a cooperative learning lesson or activity, then I'm doing my job, I think.
Great stuff, Gemma. Well, listen, thank you. I'm sure you've got a long night of work ahead of you, and we're not at the end of the working week yet.
Please don't make me go back to marking.
but thank you so much for taking time out. It's been absolutely fascinating having you on the show, and best wishes for the future.